Well, good morning. My name is Ben, and I want to take the opportunity, whether this is your very first time here, whether this is your 1,000th time here at CORE, or whether you're just sort of checking us out online, to welcome you this morning as we embark on part two of our series called Lost. The reality is that this series is sort of a four-week look at some of the most difficult circumstances that we face in each and every one of our lives. That as we look into ourselves, that we wonder how we're going to get through each of these things. Or maybe there are things that we look out into the world and we wonder, why is this going on? They're the circumstances that you've encountered that leave you asking the questions, where's God in all of this? What's he up to, and how could he possibly be in the middle of this? And maybe it even leaves us asking the question, how could a God who claims to love me allow this to happen to me? Because I just don't get it. I just don't understand. I've got all of these questions and all of this confusion raging through me. And what it really signifies is this. In this moment, at this time, all I feel is lost. I'm not sure where to go. I don't know what to turn to. In reality, what it leaves us feeling is afraid. We're afraid of where to go, and we're unsure of what the next step is supposed to be in our life. And so last week, we kicked off this series, and we talked last week about how each and every one of us at some point in our lives experience brokenness inside of us. And for all of us, this brokenness stems from a variety of places. Maybe for you, the brokenness that you feel inside of you, that sort of riddles you and that you have to deal with each and every day, comes from that dreaded doctor's visit. In which you sat down and your doctor looked you in the eye and said, I don't really want to have to tell you this. And they utter that C word. And you find yourself wondering where to go from there. Or maybe for you, the brokenness that you found yourself in was from sort of a crumbling and dysfunctional marriage. Maybe for you, it's the constant financial stress that you find yourself and your family in day after day after day. As you deal with not knowing whether you're going to be able to pay next month's bills, as you live paycheck to paycheck, as maybe in your past you faced bankruptcy or foreclosure, maybe for you that brokenness came in when you lost someone that you dearly loved, when they passed away, or maybe for you it was the death of a dream, the loss of a job. Whatever that looked like, what we recognized is that all of us have this personal brokenness that we've experienced in our past, that maybe we're experiencing in our present, and most definitely we're going to experience in our future. And last week, I hope that we answered the question, how do I begin to deal with this brokenness on the inside of me? How do I become found in the midst of the brokenness that I have? This morning, as we continue in part two of this series, this is the 1 week of our four-week series that we're actually going to take some time to look outside of ourselves. That we're going to abandon sort of our own problems, our own circumstances, our own situations, and we're going to look out into the world. At the things that we see when we look out into a hurting, broken world. And those very things that leave us feeling again. Like, how could a good God allow these things to happen? Everything that the church ever tells me is that God is so good. But I look into the world and there are all these things happening and everything screams, if God is so good, why are those things happening? It just doesn't add up to me. It just doesn't make sense. Where is he in the midst of everything that I see? Because all of us would admit, right? That as we look out into this world, we see a lot of things that have gotten messed up, don't we? I mean, it doesn't take but 5 to 10 minutes on a national news broadcast to quickly learn that there is some messed up junk going on in the world, right? I mean, we sit there and we watch ABC at 6 o'clock or whatever it is for you, the 10 o'clock news. And as soon as you sit down, it immediately kicks into the stories. And you see stories of children across the world who are facing hunger and malnourishment. Maybe for you, you look out and you constantly see stories of poverty happening in the world. And for that one, when it comes to poor and impoverished people, sure, we can look into third world countries, but the other truth is this, right? We can look into our own backyards and see those things happening. We see them happening with our neighbors, the people down the street, that they don't have the money to get by each and every day. We flip on the news and we see stories of governments who wreak havoc on anything and everything in their way. And there are wars being waged all across the earth. And time after time after time, we hear and we see stories of a world that is hurting and broken, a world that finds itself in the midst of poverty day after day after day. And we say, God, where are you? God, what in the heck are you doing? How could you possibly be in control of this? And undoubtedly, here's what we need to come to admit. You've been there. You've asked those questions, haven't you? I mean, no matter where you sit on this spectrum of a relationship with Jesus Christ this morning, whether you find yourself way over here and you're still really skeptical about this whole church thing, whether you're really skeptical about this whole God thing, or whether you find yourself thriving right now in your relationship with God, the reality is that I can speak for every one of us in saying this. We've all felt those things before. We've all had those questions inside of us before. And I don't know what it has been for you that's sort of raised that up inside of you, what you've looked out and seen in the poverty of this world. But for me, there have been countless times where I've seen things that have made me say, God, what are you doing? Why did this happen? I can remember, like a lot of us, I can't believe that it's coming up on 10 years now. But in the summer of 2007, walking out my front door and jumping in the car and driving to Leslie Lane, right here in Shelby. And as you parked your car there just outside of Leslie Lane, after the flood had rolled through, and you began walking the streets, and what was really cool at that time was you couldn't even find parking spots because everybody embarked on that part of the city. Everybody was jumping in and trying to help people. But as you jumped out of your car, you found yourself feeling like this wasn't the United States of America. This wasn't Shelby, Ohio like I had ever experienced it before. Because there were just mounds of trash in people's front yards. Things that had sort of controlled their livelihood. Things that they had sort of sustained and lived on day after day after day. Just piled in their front yards and being thrown in the dumpsters. And their houses being completely ruined. I can remember going into people's first floors. And you had to cut like this high up on the drywall. And just completely remove and throw everything away. Because it was going to be molded and disgusting. And thinking that for all of these people. Not just on Leslie Lane. But there were people all across this city in the flood zone. Who in a moment, their life had been completely changed. In a moment, their family's livelihood had been completely ripped away from them. And you stood there and you wondered, how could a good God allow this to happen? Or for me, a few years ago, my wife had the opportunity to go on a mission trip for a month to Swaziland in Africa. And as she came home and we sat on the couch and I heard all of her incredible stories, there was one story that I could not get out of my mind. To this day, I can see it, even though I've never met any of the little African children that she spent every day with. But she came home and she told me about this family of children. There was a 5-year-old girl. And every day while Krista was there, they would go to what they call care points. We all sort of know that word because we're supporting a care point in Guatemala. But they would go to this care point, and their sole priority at this care point was they would mix porridge or mealy pop in this gigantic bowl. And then they would dish it out, and the kids would just line up. And this was their only meal for the day. They would get one meal of basically ridiculously nasty oatmeal is the best way to describe it. And so they would dish this stuff out, and they would pass it out, and the kids would line up, line up, line up. But there was this one girl, and every day she would walk in at 5 years old. And she had a one-year-old that she would carry on her back every day. And she had a little three-year-old, her little siblings. There were no parents in the picture. And they told Krista this story, that this little girl, as she walked every single day, she was about 2 miles away from the care point. And so she would have to walk with her little siblings 2 miles every day. But they told her, this little girl, she actually walks 3 miles every day because she has to walk a half a mile out of the way and then another half a mile back onto the path. Because what she knew is that if she went in a straight line every day to the care point, that there were men that were waiting along the path to rape women, children. Because they actually believed in Swaziland that if you're infected with AIDS, that if you sleep with a virgin, that it will actually cure your AIDS. And so here were these 5 and 3 and 1 year old kids who every single day had been exposed to something that they didn't have to be exposed with. That there was no need for that. That every day here was this 5-year-old who had responsibilities that an 18-year-old shouldn't have. That she had to take care of her little siblings and not just take care of them like get them a meal, but make sure that they weren't taken advantage of. Make sure that they didn't encounter any men along the path. And as I heard that story and as I look at myself, maybe you find yourself in the exact same place as me, asking this question. Why me? Like, what makes me born into the situation that I'm born into? And yet these little girls, these kids every day have to put up with that, have to be in that situation, have to be in that brokenness, have to experience that poverty. And the reality was is that in the month that they were there, there was no relief for that. Nothing changed. And probably nothing was going to change. And in the midst of all of that, and there are 100 other stories just like that one. And there are 100 other stories probably in the town right beside that. And in the care point miles away. And in Guatemala, where we sponsor a care point, there are probably stories identical to that. We see this happening all over the world, and we find ourselves asking, what are we supposed to do about this? How do we deal with this? Because this isn't fair. This isn't right. I'm lost in knowing what to do. I'm lost in knowing where to go. What can we possibly do to cure this lostness, this poverty in the world all around us? And I think this morning, that for all of us, when we have these questions, there are two choices. There are two choices that all of us face. The first choice is this, and it's the easy route. We just ignore it. We just go on with life as normal. We just continue on with the status quo. Or option number two is this. We seek answers. We go looking for the solution to the problem. And my hope is this. The reason why I do this, the reason why my introverted self subjects himself to getting up here on stage every single week and talking in front of you guys, is because I hope with everything inside of me that we are creating a church, we are creating individuals, we are creating people who are all about not just ignoring the problems that are happening in the world around us, but we're creating people, and I'm growing myself because I'm first up to the chopping block, that oftentimes it's just easier for me to ignore it. But I, with all of my heart, want us to be people who go searching for answers, that go searching for the solution to the problem. And when we embark on this journey and we say, you know what, I'm tired of just ignoring the problem. I see this lostness. I see this brokenness. I see this poverty in the world around me. And I can't ignore it anymore. I can't have my questions going unanswered anymore. I'm tired of looking at God and just continually asking, God, where are you? God, what are you doing? It's about time that I figure out what in the heck he is doing. And when we embark on that journey of saying, you know what, I'm going searching for answers, the first thing that we have to answer is this: what's the cause? What's the cause of the poverty? What's the cause of the brokenness in the world around us? And the reason I think this is the first place we have to go is because for most of us, where our mind automatically drifts at first, this is just the logical place that we start, is in this big world, the reason that everything goes wrong is it must be because of God, right? I mean, it has to be because of God. He's supposed to be the one that's in control. And so when everything is broken around us, it must be his fault, right? It must be that he's choosing to do one of two things. Either he's consciously just allowing these bad things to happen, or he's just straight up ignoring all of us down here. And I think if we were to really look at the situation and we were to take a magnifying glass to the situation and really dig deep into it, I think what we would find is the exact opposite. That as we look for the cause of the problem, the cause really isn't God at all. As we look for the cause of the problem, it's me. That's right. Ben Carver is the cause of the poverty and the brokenness that happens in the world. Or at least I'll take credit for being 1/7.5 billionth of the problem. You see, the brokenness and the poverty that happens in the world is due to my sin, is due to my greed, is due to my hate and my anger. And the choices that I make every single day, that's what introduces that hurt and that pain and that devastation into the world. It's me. It is me. And I know what all of you are sitting there thinking, because this was my initial thought. Well, yeah, you can say that, but God's big, isn't he? He could take care of all this if he wanted to. He doesn't have to let this, it doesn't have to be this way. No. He does. He does. Because that's how much God loves us. You're saying, what does that mean, Ben? If God loves us enough to let bad things happen in the world? Well, no, he doesn't want bad things to happen in the world. But he loves you and he loves me enough that he's a God who's not going to make you do anything. He's a God who's not going to take control of your decisions without your permission. He's a God who doesn't force us to go the way that he wants us to go. That's just not the way that he operates. He loves us so much more than that, that he gives us freedom. And he says, look, I'm looking to you and I'm allowing you to make your own decisions. And while that shows his love and that's an incredible thing, what happens is oftentimes when we begin making our own decisions, we screw things up, don't we? I mean, most of the time when my wife lets me make my own decisions, I screw up the things in our marriages. Guys, we all know that. But the reality is God lets us make these decisions. And then in turn, because of our choices, stuff happens in the world around us. Stuff that leads to people being hurt and people being in situations that God never intended them to be in. Things happen all around us that were never a part of his plan, but that he said, you know what, I'm entrusting this to you. We'll touch on that just a little bit more. But the reality that we have to come to is that the cause of the poverty in the world isn't really God at all, but it's me. And as we look and we answer that question and we come to the realization, okay, it's me. Then where it leads us to is now that I know what the cause is, how do I fix it? How do I do something about this? How do me screwing things up change into me fixing this? Me being a part of the solution in all of this. Me changing the lostness and the poverty of this world and turning that around into something good. And I believe that for all of us, there are four incredible things that each of us have to choose to do. It takes ridiculous intentionality on our part. That when we choose to do these things, that we actually become a part of dealing with and healing the unfairness, the brokenness, and the poverty in our world. You see, I think the first thing that we have to choose to do is this. We have to choose to have hope. That the cure for the lostness and the poverty of the world around us is found in your hope. It's found in my hope. And I think oftentimes we get this word hope confused. You see, a lot of times we look at this word hope and we begin to define it as, well, that just means some sort of stroke of luck, right? Like we get asked the question, are the Indians going to win the World Series this year? I hope so. Are the Browns going to win 2 games this year? I hope so. Are you going to get that promotion? I hope so. And we begin to throw this word hope around like it's just some sort of, well, maybe it'll happen. I don't really know. I have no clue, but maybe I'll get lucky enough to allow that to happen. But in the New Testament, what's really incredible is that wasn't the way hope was used at all. That wasn't the definition of hope whatsoever. You see, in the New Testament, in God's word to us, his incredible life manual to us, he uses the word hope in a completely different way. He defines hope as this: confidence. You are sure that something is going to happen. Your hope is not a stroke of luck. Your hope is knowing that things can and should be better in this world. You see, I love this. Check this out. In Romans 8, verses 24 and 25. That's where we're going to start this morning. And as we read this passage and we look into the hope as it's defined by God, you can follow along with us on the screens as it comes up. You've also got an incredible tool in your hand. When you walked in, you received what we call our weekly. And there's a notes page right in there that you can follow along and begin to jot things down on there. But in Romans 8, here's what it says. And here's how he defines hope as looking at it, not as things are perfect right now, but we are hoping that things will get better and can be perfect in our future. Here's what it says. We were given this hope when we were saved. We were given this hope when we were saved. And then in parentheses, it says this. If we already have something, we don't need hope for it. But if we look forward to something, we don't yet have it. We must wait patiently and, help me out, confidently, right? There's no like luck involved in this. There's no wishing involved in this. What does it say? That in this hope that has been given to us, It allows us to wait and trust that something better can and will come confidently. Confidently, that we can do something about it. And when we have this hope, what it pushes us to is it pushes us to, if we believe that something better can and will happen to cure this lostness, this brokenness in the world, then it spurs us into action. I have this hope that things can be better, and now I want to do something about it. And when we do, this is the promise that we get from God. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, it says, "Now may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God our Father, who loved us and by his grace gave us eternal comfort," and there it is, "and a wonderful hope, comfort you and strengthen you in every good thing you do and say." You see, here's what this is saying. That as we take that hope that we have, that things don't have to stay status quo, that the poverty of the world can slowly be taken away, can slowly be cured. And as we walk out and we do something about it, he comforts, and even bigger than that, because, you know, I'd like a little bit more than comfort. As we walk out and do it, he actually physically strengthens us. He pushes you forward. He supports you. He spurs you on. He's got your back in those moments. And as you do those good things in this world, he's right there with you. You see, that's where number two comes into play. That as we take this hope and we put it into action and we realize that he's right there with us, that actually the cure to this is found in your and my partnership with him. In your partnership with him. You see, the action plan actually physically begins with us partnering with him to bring a cure to the hurt in this world. That was always his desire. That was always his intention. When Jesus walked the earth, he knew, "I'm not going to be here for forever. I'm leaving. I'm going someplace else. But I've got a plan that I actually think is better in this." Check this out. In John, here's what Jesus has to say in chapter 14. Here, he's setting them up for, "I'm getting out of here. I'm not going to be here for forever, but this is my incredible plan for this world. And I'll ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate who will never leave you. He is the Holy Spirit who leads into all truth." Then this is where it gets great. "No, I will not abandon you as orphans. I'll come to you. Soon the world will no longer see me, but you'll see me. Soon the world will no longer see me, but they'll see me working through you, working in you, using you to do something incredible in this world. I'm sending someone else to partner up with you so that you can be incredible at my plan for you, so that you can be a part of the solution in this world." You see, sometimes or at some point in our life, we have to come to the realization that if it's my choices that broke things, then it's got to be my choices that fix things. If I made the choices that broke some things in this world, then I can be a part of the choices that fix the things in this world. And what I love about Christ when he was here on the earth, and this is what I love about Scripture. Sometimes it's hard and it's confusing. I get that. But sometimes when we need clarity, it takes a little bit of connecting the dots. And Christ does this all throughout his time here on earth. He gives us a little snippet, and then he gives us a little snippet later, and you sort of have to connect the dots. And in his plan of this partnership with us, to cure the world, to help the world, to reach the broken, to reach the lost, to bring a solution to the poverty in our backyard, 3,000 miles away, whatever that looks like, he began to set this up while he was here. He had one of his disciples that was named Peter. Probably a lot of us have heard of Peter. But Jesus, one day he comes up to Peter and he's having this discussion with him. And Peter's first name, all right, now we're really going to get confusing, was actually Simon. So he was named Simon. The only reason we know him as Peter is because Jesus renamed him. And he has this encounter with Simon, and he says, Simon, your name is now going to be Peter. Because Peter actually means rock. And then he said to Peter, and on this rock, I will build my church. That's why I love this place. Because God actually said, I'm entrusting my church to you. I'm letting you do it. I trust and love you enough for you to do it. And he said this to Peter, Peter, on you, I am going to build my church, on humanity, on people. I will build my church. And then he comes back to Peter later, and his very last interaction with Peter is this. He comes up to Peter and he says, Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? He repeats it three times to Peter, over and over and over again. And Peter constantly says, yes, you know that I love you. You know I love you. And every time, here's how Jesus responds. If you love me, feed my sheep. If you love me, feed my sheep. And here's what Jesus was saying. Here's where the dots get connected. Check this out. He said, my plan is that you, as a human being, that you as people will be my church. But on top of that, if you are going to be all that I have called you to be, if you are going to fulfill my plan for the church, what you have to do is this. Feed my sheep. Feed my people. Take care of my people. Take care of the lost. Take care of the hurting. Do something to bring something positive to this world. That was my plan. That was my design for you as the church. And we can just throw that word church out even. That was my plan for you, Ben Carver. That was my plan for you, Joe, or Susan, or Megan, or whatever your name is. I want you to be part of the solution to the hurting and the brokenness and the poverty of this world. And you're saying, Ben, well, how do I do that? How do we do that? How do we begin to think in those terms? And I think for us, where our mindset changes is if we're willing to ask these two questions every single day. I can't imagine how my thought process and how my actions would change if I woke up every morning and I looked out into the world and I asked these two questions of myself. The first is this, what am I doing? What am I doing to make this world better? What am I doing to cure the problem? What am I doing to help lost people not feel so lost in this broken world? What am I doing to cure the poverty and the hurt and the pain and the devastation that we see all around us? And the second thing we have to ask ourselves is this. What am I praying? What am I praying? This morning, if you don't find yourself in a relationship with Christ, I totally get it. And so this is sort of a side family note that you get to check out here. For all of us who do have a relationship with Christ, oftentimes don't we find ourselves having prayers revolve around me and I? This week, I had an opportunity to drive to Amish country. I had to get up early in the morning, and I had to return something to Amish country. And so I was driving through, and I made the decision, you know what? Instead of listening to the radio all the way, I'm going to turn it off, and I'm going to be in complete silence, and I'm just going to use this as time between me and God. And so I clicked off the radio. And the very first thing that came out of my mouth or went through my mind in that moment was this. God, help me to make better decisions as a leader at CORE. God, help me to know how to grow the church. God, help me to know how to do this better. God, make me a better speaker. And all of a sudden it was like, whoa, Ben, what are you doing? Why would you start your prayers like that? Why have you turned everything about me, me, me? And I had to put the brakes on in the moment and think, you're not qualified to start your prayers like that. So I had to step back and I had to say, you know what? For me, if I'm going to make a difference in this world around me, my prayers can't start with me every day. My prayers have to start with you every day, with them every day, with out into this world every day. When we ask ourselves those two questions, it leads us into this partnership with God. And as we embark on this partnership, his incredible plan is this. Now you've partnered with me. Now it's time for you to partner with someone else. Now it's found in your teamwork. It's found in our teamwork together. You see, I believe that God can use one person to make an incredibly big difference in this world. I do. I believe that God can use you individually to make an incredibly big difference in your family, in this city, in the world in its entirety. I do believe that. But I also believe this. I also believe that God can use a group of people to make an astronomically larger difference in the world. He can use you to make a big difference, but he can use us to make an astronomically larger difference in the world. There's power in us doing this together. We can do more together. We can impact more together. We can be bigger together. We can mend more people together. You see, I love in the book of Ecclesiastes, and this isn't in your notes, so if you get a chance, check this out. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, it's in the Old Testament, almost right in the middle. You'll see this passage that you come across, and in verse 9, here's what Solomon tells us. He says, I found something in this world that is the most insane thing. That is the most pointless thing. And it's like this moment where everybody's leaning in like, oh, he's going to come up with something good here. And he says, the most pointless thing I've ever come across is this. People trying to do it by themselves. One person trying to go through life, trying to figure things out on their own. And he turns around and he says, no, two are better than one. Because you can stand back to back and you can fight battles and defend each other. When one person falls down, you can help them up. But then he finishes the whole passage like this. Let me just hit you with this. But three are better than two. And you know, Solomon was like, I don't have time to keep going with this. But four is better than three, probably. And five is better than four. And six is better than five. That God is actually calling us to do this together because he knows that us collectively as 125 people right here, or us collectively as 9,500 in this city, or whatever that looks like, that us collectively can do more. And we each have an important role to play in this. And here's where he talks about roles. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, it says this about our teamwork together. It's not important who does the planting or who does the watering. What's important is that God makes the seed grow. The one who plants and the one who waters work together with the same purpose, and both will be rewarded for their hard work. For we are both God's workers, and you are on God's field. You are God's building. Because of God's grace to me, I have laid the foundation like an expert builder. But I'm not capable. Here's what Paul's saying. I'm not capable of going to the next step. From here, now others are building on top of that. So I do my part. I do my role. But I can't do it all. You can't do it all. But when I have someone standing next to me, I lay the foundation and then they build on top of that. They bring their skills, their ability, their knowledge, their life experiences to the table. And collectively, we build something incredible that I couldn't have done on my own, that you couldn't have done on your own. We cure poverty in one city when I could only have done one person. We were meant to do this together. And when we do, God honors that, and God makes this thing explode, and God begins to eradicate this poverty in the world little by little by little, one day, one chunk at a time. The last cure, the last way in which we have to deal with this poverty in the world, and it really starts and it ends here, is we have to be found in His love. We have to be found in His love. And I said earlier that there would be more about this concept that I started with later. Well, here it is. You see, His love is where this problem of poverty in the world started. Now hang with me before you start accusing me of heresy or something up here. You see, the poverty in this world all began with His love. He just loved us too dang much. He loved us too much to take control without our permission. He loved us too much to force us to do anything. He loved us so much that He allows us to make our own decisions, that He gives us free will, that He says, you know what? I want a relationship with you, but any of us who are in a marriage know this. Anybody who has ever had a relationship with any person, whether that be a friend or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, know that no good relationship can be predicated on you being forced to do everything. You being forced to love that person. It just doesn't work that way. And so God said, I love you so much that I'm giving you every choice in the book, that I'm allowing you to make your own decisions in this world, to choose what you want to do, to choose where you want to go, to choose how you want to be a part of people's life. But unfortunately, again, we make our own decisions, and that's when the world gets messed up. That's when we sin. That's when we introduce poverty into the world. We get it wrong. But on the flip side, He also loved us so much that He created us in His image. Do you know what that means? That God loved us so much that the perfect creator of the universe, the only perfect person to ever walk on this earth, said, I love you so much that I'm going to take a chunk of who I am and I'm going to put that in you. Because here's what I believe, that when you see my image in you, that when you see that I've instilled greatness in you, that you can actually be a part of the fix, that you can actually mend things, that you can actually fix things in this world. But it won't happen unless you first find yourself in my love, and then you allow my love working in and through you to be shown to the rest of the world. In 1 John 4, it says this. We know how much God loves us, and we have put our trust in His love. God is love. And all who live in love live in God. And God lives in them. And as we live in God, our love grows more perfect. Our love grows and it spreads and it goes to reaches of the world that we're not even touching with our hands, that we can never get to. But we begin to make an impact in places in our backyard, in places in Guatemala, in places in Africa. Whatever that looks like, that we begin to make a difference. You see, here's what I believe. As we close this morning, I believe this with all my heart, that this impoverished world that we live in doesn't need a finger wagging in its face. It doesn't need a finger pointing the blame, saying, you're why the world's messed up. Your choices are why we're here. You see, what the world needs is the world needs five. Reaching down to help up. Reaching down to use the resources and the things that we've been given to make a difference in this world. But it will only begin if we choose to have hope that things can, that things should, and that things will get better. It will only happen if we choose to say, you know what? I want to do something. I want to enter into partnership and actually do something about it. And so I'm going to change my thought process and I'm going to ask the question every day, what am I doing and what am I praying to make a difference in this world? And as we do that, it will only happen in an astronomically big way if we do it together and we join hands and we join arms and we know that what you and I can do is so much more than what I can do by myself. And it will never happen if we don't first find ourselves seeing his love and wanting to take his perfect love out into the world. And when we do that day after day, in the midst of the heartache and the hurt and the pain and the poverty that we still see, that we haven't completely gotten rid of, but we're saying, what can I knock out today? What can I knock off today? As we do that day after day after day, what we find is that more and more we become found in the midst of the poverty of the world.